Hey, I'm Spencer Powell, and welcome back to Builder Funnel Radio. Today, I have a special guest with me, and that is Ricky First. Ricky has an extensive background in sales, working in a design build firm, and he joined the Builder Funnel team about a year and a half ago and is a consultant here at our company. And I thought it would be helpful to bring him in for today's episode so we could really dig into the sales process and really pick his brain on sales tips, strategies, some tactics within that sales process, specifically in the design build format. And so we're going to dig into that today, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Hey, Ricky, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good, good. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Most of the Builder Funnel Radio audience has probably not been introduced to you yet. So maybe just give everyone a little bit of background. How did you get into the crazy world of construction that we're all in?
Yeah. So background on kind of my story and getting into remodeling, into residential construction. So it started while I was in school. I originally went to school for physical therapy, actually found out pretty quick that that wasn't going to be the route that I was meant to go on. And so about a semester in, switched over to finance because I've always just enjoyed just the business side of, you know, the way that businesses operate, right? Like the actual hands-on, getting into the numbers, things like that. And as I was going through school, I just kind of realized that what I was most interested in was more problem solving side of things and actually being involved in the, you know, the day to day. And specifically, you know, I've always loved working with my hands. So I decided to look into remodeling companies in the area, primarily the design build, right? Because those are typically the kind of larger companies that have a little bit more process and strategy in place. And so I started working for a design build firm in Cleveland called Hearst Design Build. And I started off as a carpenter apprentice, just kind of learning how nuts and bolts, how projects went together and the process start to finish of remodeling a kitchen or an addition project or anything like that. And as I continued to learn more, just wanted to have more responsibility and ultimately ended up working in more of a sales role for Hearst. And at the end of my time there, I was overseeing the design and kind of sales design process start to finish prior to construction. So like estimating, design, sales, all that stuff. And then I introed with Builder Funnel and started working here for about a year ago.
Yeah. I'm curious what that transition looked like from, you know, I think you said apprentice, but then getting into kind of sales, because you said, you know, you got into it, you like working with your hands. I feel like a lot of business owners do the same, right? They get into the craft because they like the building, but then you quickly realize that, hey, if you're going to, you know, progress or move, you kind of have to actually get out of that and get into something else. But what was that transition like for you?
Yeah. And that's a good question. And I've seen it a couple different ways because as, you know, as Hearst scaled, there were a couple different sales people that we hired. And they all had different backgrounds. So I think one of the biggest things is after I had the experience of seeing how everything went together, I had the confidence to know no matter what, we're going to be able to build a project, right? Like a good example I use is, you know, asking someone if you're meeting with them, just do you think you could remove this wall, right? Whatever wall, just a random wall. And I mean, usually the answer is yes, right? I mean, you could essentially just take the house down to and just rebuild it to change one element, like a wall. So I always had like a good understanding of just, hey, like every project is possible. And that's more just figure out if there's, you know, a good fit, which thinking through just some of the personas of remodeling salespeople or consultants is usually like you have that person that, or like one of the archetypes is the person that comes from the production standpoint. So they really rely heavily on their understanding of the construction side of things. Like, oh, can we take this wall down? Like, I don't know. Let me poke a hole in here and see. Or like the design person that's like cost aside, like, yeah, we can design anything you want us to design. We can do anything. And there's not really a whole lot of thought into like, well, that's going to double the cost of the project, right? And I would say those are the two big ones. And I would say fortunately, you know, part of being or coming from that design build background or going through the, you know, you have that synergy between construction, between design. I was kind of able to bridge that gap with understanding like everything's possible, but we kind of need to understand that first part of like, what do you want? What do you want to invest? What's the end goal? Is it that you're looking for more space, or is it looking to maybe break out to have another room that you could use and you don't want to have that open floor plan or whatever that might look like? So, yeah, I mean, I would say the transition really came with more starting off and understanding some of those kind of preliminary design elements and also understanding the nuts and bolts of how things go together and that, yeah, anything's possible, but there are things that affect those changes, like knocking a wall down or adding on, right? All those sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I'm kind of curious too, as you made that transition and you're meeting with lots of homeowners, what were some of those early observations that you made either about learning how homeowners kind of operate in the buying process? Yeah. I guess maybe we'll start there.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting too, because you think about, I mean, obviously, like the business to business aspect is very much like, does this make sense? Right? Like we can make this work. But in a lot of times, I would say a majority of times, especially in remodeling, right, you're not going to recoup a lot of the cost. Right? I mean, for some of these large six figure, maybe even seven figure projects, you're not going to be able to resell your home and get that money back. And so it's definitely more of an emotional and more desire based purchase. And so dealing with that, those constraints with each person that you work with, right? Like there are those people where it's like, hey, I've been an engineer for however many years, and I'm really hands-on, and I want to know everything that's going on and all the details, and those sorts of more technical elements are really important to me. And you have the people that it's like, oh, well, I'm a lawyer, so I'm going to need to take some time to review this contract, let me get back to you. Or the finance person who's all worried about the number side of things, or you get someone that's more creative, that's just worried about design. And it's really like managing all of those different personalities, right? Like, cause you, once you set those expectations and you want them to enjoy the experience, you want them to be raving fans, right? And, you know, as anyone knows in any business, once you have a couple bad reviews or you don't provide that really good experience, that could really hurt you. And so one, I mean, it's such an intimate part of someone's life to be in their home, to be working on their kitchen or a bedroom, right? Or like you're adding an in-law suite for their parents or their in-laws that are going to be living at home because they're getting older, whatever that is. I mean, it's going to be a part of their life for a long time. And really, I think moving through that process as empathetic as possible is really one of the big lessons that I learned pretty early on, is that, you know, you need to make sure that people are, they feel comfortable with you and that they're happy with what's going on.
Yeah. 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 You bump into lots of different emotions in that process, like you said, and yeah, different personality types and careers. And yeah, you navigating that is definitely a different in that consumer kind of homeowner world. Over the last, yeah, I guess 14, 15 months or so, you've been talking to a lot more remodelers. You know, you were on the business side, you know, in a remodeling business, working that sales process. But now you've probably talked to hundreds at this point. What are some of the common, I guess, mistakes that you're uncovering that you're seeing a lot of remodeling companies make as it pertains to like the sales process?
Yeah. The biggest one is just that last part, is a sales process. A lot of people will just not have a process in place, right? Like they're just, it's kind of different every time, or, you know, you leave it up to the homeowner. You get those people where they really want to, they're assertive, right? And so they're going to drive the process, and you leave it up to them. And so then they're the ones saying like, hey, we want to do this next and this next and this next. And you can get, you know, 6 months into that process and find like, well, you know, I mean, we're only halfway through because they've kind of commandeered this entire process and made it all about what they want to do instead of sticking to the process that, you know, works. Right. And so, especially as you scale, there are tons of opportunities where not having a solid process or understanding of what needs to come next can really hurt you. And so that would be the biggest thing. And then second to that in terms of
before you get to the second one, when you say not having a process, and I guess what would be an example of that? Is that just like one person calls in and you maybe meet with them at their home, but maybe somebody else, you like bring them into the office first? Or like, I guess I'm curious, like, what would it look like to not follow a process? Some common examples.
Yeah. So the easiest one is asking the prospect or the lead, does this make sense? Right? Like, you go through that initial qualification, you're asking all these questions, you want to know more about the project, you want to know more about budget and time frame and what they expect. Why'd you hear, or what, you know, what prompted the call with us in the first place? And then you get through all those questions and you say, well, typically we go to, you know, we'd like to check out the project. Is that something that you'd be okay with? Right? Like, if that's the process, that's a process. But if they're going to be like, you know, actually, like, we're both pretty busy, is there a way that you can just send us information about your process? And you're like, oh, well, I don't even have any, like, we don't do this. Most of the time we go to people's house, because most of the time people say, yeah, it's going to be fine for you to stop by. And then now you just turn it over to them. And now you're going to need to come up with some information that's relevant enough, educational enough, that they're going to be like, great, yeah, we want to move forward. And you're just relying on now that, where you're veering away from what you know works.
Yeah, it sounds like almost there's like an element of just confidence and matter of fact to it, where you're guiding them and saying, this is the next thing, this is the next thing, versus asking. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and especially too, and this is, I think, sales and just in any industry, but it's the certainty, right? Of knowing, like, this is what comes next. This is what we need to do, right? Can you help us? The last thing that someone wants to hear when you're going to check out, let's say, a kitchen project, is, hey, do you think this is a project that you guys can do? And you say, I think so, right? Like, no one would want to hear that. They'd want to be like, yeah, like, we've done hundreds of projects like this. And if you think about companies that are able to scale, you don't just start a business that operating at $10, $15 million in revenue by doing $10 to $15 million kitchen or whole home remodels, right? It's gradual. For a lot of people, they might start off by installing windows and doors, or they do handyman stuff or some exterior work. And then they say, hey, we really want to get into remodeling, or even remodelers where they're like, we have the design capacity or design capabilities. We want to get into a custom home once a year or something like that. You don't will it into the universe and just say, we're going to start taking this on, and the phones start ringing and you get a ton of leads specifically for custom home builds. But that first project that you land, you need to know that you can do it, that you do have the capabilities. And so putting the client's mind or prospect's mind at ease to know, yeah, we're capable, we've done in the past, or we know that we can do it, is really the first step. And so if you're going through your process with uncertainty, your prospects are going to pick up on that, and then they're going to lose trust, just essentially based on the information you're sharing with them and the feeling that you're conveying.
Good. Yeah. And then you were going to get into another one. You said process, just not having one was the biggest mistake, but anything else you're seeing that's pretty common?
Yeah. Well, specific in design build, there are two big things. So one is, you see that, and you can always pick it up based on the conversation or language that someone may use, but you can identify pretty quickly whether someone started as, let's say, a designer or an architect, and then they got onto the build side of things, or someone that started from the build side of things and then said, you know what, we should just design projects as well, because they're really confident in whatever they started out with, right? And so then it's the person that has, you know, there's a heavy focus on the construction side of things. And when they're meeting with someone to say, like, hey, let's move you into our design phase, this is what it is. It's probably lower than most of their competitors that focus on design in the area in terms of just that initial investment. But also, they're only talking about what they're going to do in construction, right? And so they're like, well, I mean, I get that you guys might have the best construction team, but you're asking me to sign this contract that's all about design, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily equate. Or they could be completely sold on the idea that you guys have the best construction process. But again, that's not what they're signing right now. They're moving into a design phase. And similarly, with people that are in design, you could say, like, oh yeah, we out of everyone that we meet with, we have an excellent close rate to move people in from prospect to design. But then we have a lot of people drop off when we move into construction, because our construction, we're just not that confident, and we don't have that solid understanding on the construction phase. And if you're doing design build, you're doing both. So you need to have that understanding of both the design side and the construction or production side of things, And that's something that's commonly missed and very easy to spot in terms of where someone initially started that business and started growing from.
Yeah, kind of a side question, veering a little bit outside of sales, but how do you think you approach that if you grew up doing, you know, construction, that's how you got into the business, but you really have come to see that, hey, design build, I think, is a better model. It'll get us better results for our, you know, clients. It'll help us move up to higher average project sizes. You know, you see the benefits, but you don't have the capability yet, right? You're kind of in that aspirational zone. Are there some moves to be made or things that you've seen would be good things to consider next?
Yeah. And so you can look at it in two ways. It's pretty much the same in both ways. But let's say you're coming from the construction side of things, where you've had bags on since you were a kid. Your parents did, or maybe this is your grandfather's company that's been, you're now the third generation here. If you're trying to scale it and you're still involved in the day to day, you're still almost a project manager in the field. You have a team, right? In most cases, right, if you're design heavy, you usually kind of you sub most of the, or you use trade partners for a lot of the construction phases or throughout construction. And then if you are on the construction side, odds are you probably have a crew or you have a team of people that you work with. So the first thing that you need to do, and we've already kind of talked about it, right, is getting out of that day to day. And so having someone on your team that you're able to say, hey, like I need to spend a day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, whatever it is at first, to start focusing on that other side of the business, right? Someone that you can say, this is going to be their like a foreman or a construction manager, whatever that position or role looks like. And they kind of almost co-manage it with you, or maybe you're getting them to the point where they're doing that completely. And then now you can stop working in the business and work more on the business, right? And then from there, it's really about how you frame it, right? So a lot of times people think, right, you come from this construction background, and how am I supposed to compete with some of the larger design build or designers, architects in the area? I mean, they have these massive showrooms and whatever that might look like, whatever that process is. And it's, again, I mean, just going back to the framing side of things, it's all about what you're communicating. So if you're saying, hey, you know, well, we don't have a showroom and we're missing all these things that maybe some of our competitors have, that's, again, you're framing it in a negative light. But if you're saying something like, you know, you're working directly with the owner to make sure that you're moving through this process in a timely manner, making sure that nothing is left to chance, like full transparency, and we're with you and walking you through showrooms that you need to go to, like we're providing you with an experience that you're not going to get at one of those larger companies, right? And this is, it's more bespoke, right? That speaks to someone in a different way than that large showroom might speak to someone. And that could, again, be all based on just appearances and how you're choosing to frame the situation.
Yeah, great. All right, let's talk numbers. There's a lot of things you can track through marketing, through sales. On the sales side, what are you seeing out there? Just people tracking versus not tracking. And then what are some basics? What should people be looking at to measure kind of that sales process and conversion rates and effectiveness?
Yeah. The main thing that I'll see with someone, and to your point, I mean, if let's say I've had conversations with, you know, over 200 different remodelers, out of 200 remodelers, 90% of them, if not 95, would say that their close rate is between 20 to 25%, right? Every single one. The outliers, the other 10%, they probably would claim something like 90% close rate, right? And it's always interesting to hear, because it's always followed up with unqualified leads, right? So like if you're handpicking all of these leads, you know that you're going to close a quarter of them. And maybe it's just because, you know, that's an industry metric, or that's a number that you're comfortable being around. But really, that percentage is closer to the 6 to 8% if you're looking at all leads. And if you're thinking about predictability in terms of revenue that's going to be coming in, it's not based on, well, we know that we're going to get X amount of qualified leads a month. Like if you're getting 100 leads, let's say on a monthly basis, there is no guarantee in terms of what the qualified number of leads are going to be. And so when you see in a situation that we're in right now, where things are getting a little bit slower than they were definitely in COVID times. But even if you compare it to kind of first quarter 2023, leads are down, right? Or your another one is we have a lot of leads, but they're not necessarily ready to go right now. We have the top of funnel leads. And everyone's all worried about like, oh, well, we judge good leads on like referrals, right? Like those are the leads that we want to meet with. Well, and everyone does, you know, don't get me wrong, those are great leads. But if you're looking at predictability, having a solid sales process and having an understanding of we need X amount of total leads to come in to get X amount of projects. If that number is really 8%, that's what you should be judging it against. Because if you have 100 projects or 100 leads, raw leads coming in on a monthly basis, you know that you'll roughly get 8 of those people into design, right? And so if it's actually 8%, go by the 8% number. Don't go by the 25% of qualified, because is it roughly 50% of those 100 that are qualified? And are they qualified now? Are they always qualified? Because based on a lot of conversations, at least right now, people are not as qualified as they were 2 years ago when we're at the height of COVID. And everyone that was coming in was ready to go and had money to spend. And if not, they could take a loan out with low interest rates. And so really understanding that in order to have a good sales process, there needs to be tools in place to meet everyone where they are and take them to wherever they want to be. Whether that's, hey, I want to be more informed to make a decision in a year, or maybe that's, hey, you know, I have no idea if I even can remodel, right? Then we need to educate that person to be able to say, or to have them be able to say, I'm ready to go now. Or maybe again, it's in a year. And then just off those two, let's say you have two projects that close 1 year from now. Either way, you need to be prepared for those raw numbers rather than having these skewed metrics that are based on getting you a close rate that you like to see.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many things here I want to dive into a little bit more. I guess let's start with the conversion and people saying, oh, you know, it's 20, 30% or whatever. And then they say on qualified leads. Why do you think that's kind of the default answer? Is it just like an ego thing? Or like if you close at 8%, it's like, it just is like, wow, that seems like really bad. Because to your point, I'd rather know, you know, from raw lead to meeting to first, you know, for phone call to meeting to design to construction, whatever that is, right? Whether it's 2% or 12 or 8 or 6, because if you don't actually know it, you can't improve it, you know. But do you know why that is? You know, why?
Yeah, I haven't put a lot of thought into it, actually. And honestly, it is a little bit baffling, only because if you think about, and if you talk to anyone in a business to business standpoint, people are worried about the numbers. You know, well, it does this make sense? Especially if you think about marketing, I want to invest X amount of dollars. How many dollars am I going to get back? But when you think about the sales side of your business, you're not dealing with actuals. You're dealing with hypotheticals. I mean, if you think like based on all of 2023 data, you can retroactively look at that and say, yeah, I had 100 leads, only 50 were qualified. That's a 50% lead qualified lead rate. Is it going to be 50 this year? I don't know. You don't know either. No, I mean, no one knows what that's going to be like. But if you have like a trailing 12 month in terms of your close rate or that historical data, I mean, that's tangible numbers. Why, or, you know, the main reason why people work off qualified is not something I think I would be able to answer, but it is interesting. I'm imagining it just has to do with industry practices or standard industry practices.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of fascinating. But yeah, let's go back to just the numbers, because you kind of mentioned, you know, qualified leads, raw leads. What should people kind of be looking at so that they actually can figure out what that real number is, right? Is it whatever, 6, 8, 12, 15%, wherever they land?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually the easiest way to calculate those metrics is to reverse engineer your goals, right? So if you're targeting, let's say $5 million in revenue a year, right? Based on that goal, how many projects are you going to need to move forward based on your average close rate? And then based on your close rate, how many people are you, or how many leads do you need? And this is where it gets skewed. If you know definitively, like, hey, our close rate is 5. Well, that's a tough number to think through. If that's just out of 5% of everyone I get in front of moves forward, that's still what that number is, right? And so if it's 5% of everyone and I have a conversion rate on my website, meaning like, you know, I have X amount of people that come through my website that end up being leads, then you know how much traffic you need to have. And then it's more predictable, at least from a digital standpoint. Some of the things that you won't be able to predict, obviously, are when you're going to get a referral or when your phone's going to ring. But if you have solid marketing systems in place, it is very easy to hedge against, or is much easier to hedge against some of those other unknowns, like if the Smiths are going to refer the Robinsons to call you for their big $500,000 kitchen project, an addition that's going to be a one-off or the big one for the year. That's uncertain. But if you know that you need 100 people going to your website every single month, you know to track that on a monthly basis.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, from the marketing side, you know, you're typically looking at things like raw leads. And then as it kind of bridges into sales, I think where a lot of it comes from actually is that some people say that a phone call is a lead, like it's that pre-qualification phone call. But then some people, I think, define the first meeting as a lead because they go, well, if I qualify them and or I get them on the phone and I disqualify them, they don't even count it because they're just like, oh, that's not a good fit, right? Like, that's not a lead. And so I think, you know, what we're talking through is really you want to track that raw lead to phone call. You know what that percentage looks like, and then phone call to first meeting, and then first meeting to design, and then into construction. And that's where you kind of get that, you know, lower percentage, because it's based on just we're looking at raw leads to phone calls and then continuing from there. And so, yeah, if you have those numbers, then you can look at them and go, oh, wow, that conversion rate in the middle there is really terrible. Like, what are we doing there? Can we improve that? You know?
Yeah. And another part of that too is just when you're classifying it as, oh, we're only going to count this as a lead if we're going out to meet with them. If you're recording someone's information, which you obviously should, if someone's calling in, you should capture their information so you can continue to engage with them. But one of the biggest things is how do you qualify that, or how do you classify that person? So someone calls in, they say, hey, you know, Bob Smith looking to remodel my bathroom, right? I have this budget or whatever that looks like. Maybe the budget's too low and you're going to say, hey, check out what an industry partner that you guys work with or something like that. How do you classify that person's information in a CRM or in, if you're doing it super old school, you have some sort of spreadsheet or using a project management tool as a CRM? Are you classifying that person as a trade partner, as a client, or are you classifying them as a prospect or a raw lead, which is what you should be, right? And then tracking it from there.
Yeah. And so if you're listening now, recommendation would be, hey, at least start tracking, you know, raw leads, just total inquiries, could be a form fill, you know, somebody that called, somebody that emails in, a referral, however it comes in, like, let's track all of that and then figure out how many phone calls resulted from all those leads. Some of them probably never booked a call or got on the phone, and then go from there, phone to meeting, meeting to design, design to construction. You know, it's just a handful of stages. It's not like, oh, there's these 30 stages we have to track people through. But it really, to your earlier point, if you know this month we got 100 raw leads and you know your conversion rate, you know, over a trailing 12 months is generally like we get 6 of those into design, that's predictability. You know, it may not be, oh, 100 leads came in this month and they all went into design this month, but you pretty much know within the next few months as these people move and make decisions, like, 6 of them move into design. And so, yeah, I think that just having that data, and data not just from like 1 or 2 months, because you said, you know, like try to get a year, I think that's really valuable for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about hard close tactics a little bit. So you and I both follow a bunch of people online and, you know, different sales philosophies, I guess, read a lot of books on sales, and there's definitely like this pocket of the internet that's very into, I would say, more of the like hard close, hardcore closing, and it's all about closing. Any thoughts? What's your general reaction to kind of that stuff?
So my general reaction to those heavy close type, maybe influencers would be a good word for it, but, and I don't think I have one thought. I think I have tons of different thoughts on that. High level. Right. If you're talking to someone, or if you're keeping up with someone that is pushing the rhetoric of, like, you know, always be closing. One, I mean, that's just such an old, like, the market has transformed, and you just, like, there's so much education out there that people can find. You typically see it And the examples of it are usually from like a car sales standpoint. If you go to a car dealership, you say, hey, you know, I want to check out this car or whatever that might look like in terms of your experience. And then you meet a sales rep there and they pull out a different car that costs $10,000 more. And they're asking you as you're test driving, like, what do I need to do to get you to drive away with this today? And, you know, some sort of hook to like, let me take you back to my desk to get things going. And there is an influencer or sales influencer that they do have the hooks for getting you back to the desk. I mean, if you think of what you're able to do now, like I'll go to cargurus.com. I'm going to look at the exact car that I want. I'm going to have, there's Carfax. There's literally all the information I need about the car that I need to buy. And I can go to that dealership only as a formality because I've already made the decision and been like, you just say, hey, this is what I want to buy. And then, I mean, really it's just up to whoever I meet on the lot that just says hi to me first because I've already made my decision. But if that person starts trying to push me on some different car or you know, I don't know any information about that. Again, I've already made my decision. And so in a lot of cases, you can frustrate people more than anything. Again, relating this back to remodeling, people can watch shows now. People can look on the internet. People can look at your competitors. People can already identify the big areas that they see as a weakness in your business and in your process before they even meet with you. And so if you're just trying to get them to move forward with a contract that they're already a little bit weary about because they've done their research, then you're shooting yourself in the foot because they're not ever going to be able to sign. And really no one is going to be able to, like, you can't force anyone to write that check. It needs to make sense. And you need to be able to be empathetic to their individual situation and say like, hey, this is why we'd be a good fit and get them through that way and help be more of an ally rather than a me versus you. Like this is more of a mission that I need to accomplish, right? To hit a quota or to just close you, right? I mean, it's never a good term.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of fascinating to me too, because it does feel like a lot of, at least in, you know, remodeling and custom building, a lot of the owners and I don't know, just general vibe of the industry is very much just, you know, personal connection and, you know, deeper relationships and usually don't see a lot of that, you know, hard close mentality. Usually it's the other way. There's actually not enough, like there could be a little more pressure in the sales process, or at least just like enabling people to make the decision one way or another, you know, to keep moving through. And so it is interesting to see kind of that pocket online that's just very hardcore, kind of all about the close and getting the deal. But yeah, do you have any kind of guiding principles? Yeah, maybe make their way more into the remodeling space. And when you're dealing with homeowners and big projects, very emotional, like family driven decisions.
Two parts of that, because I did want to touch on just what I think of when I think of most of the sales influencers. And again, there's not everyone. Like there are definitely, and even out of these people, I think you can pull some nuggets, right? Like there's value in any sort of learning, whether it's to do the exact opposite of what they're saying, or if it's, you know, something that is really valuable, right? Maybe it's just a one-off, but you know, never shy away from trying to at least educate yourself on what that might be. But there are two things on like the influencer side or on the sales side is one, it's very common for sales influencers to have gone to jail. So I usually stay away from that. If I found out that they went to jail, it's usually a big red flag. And it feels like you can almost kind of tell based on the way that they're quote unquote selling. So that's a big one. And then the other thing too, is like, if you think about like super successful sales, right? Like if you think about like, you're absolutely killing it. You're one of the best salespeople in the world and you're making so much, but you're so successful. Why are you then trying to move other? Why are you trying to sell people into a system for you to show them how to sell, right? Like it always feels like, well, what would happen to the whole sales thing if that was working so well for you? But guiding principles, when I think of just, you know, making sure that people are happy with the experience is one, focusing on happiness, be empathetic. If you think about any phase or any life cycle stage of a prospect, whether it is that person they're ready to go today, they have a great budget, they're referred to by a client that's worked with you a ton in the past, like great. Like that's a prospect that everyone wants to meet with. And it's exciting to go out on those calls. You feel really good about it, but to also feel as excited about the person that maybe they're not your ideal client. You work with people that are in their 50s and 60s, and you're working, or you get a call with someone that's new to the area. They're single guy, no family, he's in his late 20s, and you're like, I've never worked with someone that young. Like And like they work in an area, it's kind of like up and coming. Like this isn't really where we work to begin with. And then you just, you know, you don't look forward to that. Or maybe even you're saying like unqualified just based on location. But that person still needs help, right? And if you're for him, if you provide him with just a great experience of like, yeah, you know what? We're not going to be a good fit. And here's why. We can't work in a condo like this. Like think about what it's going to be like to, like you're going to expect to pay a lot more. Like if you should be paying this much for your project type. And then if you think about, you know, travel expenses and just how much longer it's going to take, you should almost factor this in as well. And if anyone's giving you a price that's below this point or higher than this point, I'd be a little bit skeptical. You're still providing them with all the information that you need for that this person to be like, wow, okay, yeah, great. Like you've spent more time than I thought you would, right? But it's shifting your mindset from wanting a sale to wanting the best for the person that you're talking to, right? Like if you're, again, you're focused on how can I help this person? How can I provide this person with information that they need to be educated, right? I mean, on top of everything that they could know based on just market research and understanding the process, what can I share with him or her that is going to help them through their journey?
Yeah. Yeah. I love the guiding principle of like always be helping, or how can I just be of service and help, even if you're not the one to do the project. And it makes me think of a common example that we see that happens from time to time. And, you know, we'll be working with a remodeling company and they'll have maybe a couple of bad reviews online. And they're like, yeah, we never even worked with those people. But the person called in and they're like, oh, sorry, not a good fit, probably because the budget was like, I want to do my kitchen for $2,000. And they're like, we don't do anything under 75, you know, so they're, but the way you have that conversation and where you maybe point them to as a resource, like, hey, I totally get that that's your budget range. You know, we're typically our minimum is 75. I understand that probably won't work for you, but like, hey, have you tried like at Home Depot or going here and looking for this type of, you know, you might be able to like, you know, freshen up your countertops for that budget or something. But, you know, honestly, beyond that, you might not be able to get much, you know, or just giving them the real information and some next steps. You could actually potentially turn that into a positive Google review, or they're like, great, not a good fit. They disappear. But then 3 years later, you get a referral out of nowhere. And it's because that person just like had a good experience with you, even though you didn't, you know, exchange dollars. But they had a friend that did have that budget. So they'll always be helping. It's kind of like, don't burn any bridges. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So as we think about the sales process and where to make improvements, I guess, what would be like an untapped opportunity that you're seeing for somebody to make an improvement within that sales bucket?
One of the, we already touched on it, but just the missing out on the again, quote unquote, unqualified leads, those people that you're not even talking to right now. Or you're not saying are qualified or part of the quarter of those qualified leads that you guys move into your process. I would say to make sure that you are engaging with them, that you at least have a, again, process in place that you use to talk to those people. Like that person that's like, hey, you know, new to the area, haven't checked out the site in an area maybe you don't work in, maybe the budget's a little bit low, they haven't heard of you guys, you know, haven't remodeled in the past. You know, all those maybe potential, not red flags, but getting there, right? Have a process in place to be like, great, I'm going to send you this information and I'm going to follow up with you in this time frame, just to help educate them through that process so they do understand a little bit more about what to expect. Because that person that might be a little bit snappy with you on the phone when they first call in might be because they've gotten burned in the past and they're a little bit weary. You know what that might look like in terms of the relationship of working with you. And then the other thing too is providing valuable information about your business. Another really common point that people miss within their sales process is that they miss out on key details surrounding what makes them different. Again, this can go into process. But let's say you use a program like JobTread, for example, and you use that for communication, for your project calendar, for any quotes. All of the information is kept in one location where the homeowner has access to. You go through the entire process talking about how you're able to help them, and you don't once mention that you use the JobTread platform. And you have a process to follow up with people, And you get a hold of them in a couple of weeks and they say, yeah, you know what? We actually ended up moving forward with someone else. They use a tool called Co-Construct or JobThread. They use the exact same thing. And we really like that. And then you're just kicking yourself because you failed to mention that in your process, right? And so that could look a number of different ways, you know, process related, warranty related, or types of project that you've done in the past. But being transparent, all of your business is a big opportunity that a lot of people miss out on.
I'm really glad you mentioned that for a couple of reasons. One, I think it's super valid is just, hey, what are all of these things that I do that add value to the homeowner, the person that's going to go through this process? And a lot of times we overlook them because we think, oh, these are just regular things, and we don't highlight them, you know. And so then you bump into these situations where it's like, oh, other people are doing that too, but they just said it. So they get the advantage of looking different. And to your point, it kind of stings. You said you're kicking yourself because you're like, oh, we do that too, but it's too late at that point. And the other thing is that when you do include those things like, hey, we use project management tool like JobThread, here's why it's really important for you. And then, hey, we do this, you know, dust removal system, and this, you know, here's why it's important to you. We have this extended warranty. Here's why it's important to you. Let's say you have like 5, 6, 7 of those things that you're talking about as you're going through the sales process. In sales, you are repeating this over and over and over and over and over again. And so I think it's really tempting to skip some of those because you're like, oh, this is my 5th meeting this week. And you feel like you're just saying the same thing. And so I think that sometimes you get caught in that trap of like, I'm just going to breeze through this, or you don't do it, give it its full justice. And what you have to just remember is this is the first time for that person hearing it, even if it's your 200th time, and it feels normal to you, but it's not to them. And so I think you also have that element involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because something that I hear a lot is we provide an excellent experience. And honestly, we get a lot of leads, people that we met with that ended up not going with us, and they had such a bad experience, or, you know, they missed out on X, Y, and Z, that when they built a project again, they said, hey, I should have dealt with, or I should have worked with you guys in the first place. And people usually say that as like, it's a good thing. And while it is a good thing for people to come back to, the thing I initially think of is, why didn't they go with you for the first project? I mean, you did something, or maybe you didn't do something on that first go around that made them say, you know what, I don't think they're quite the best fit. And then they chose someone else. So what wasn't explained, or what did you touch on, or what did that look like? And it's more of a self-reflection on your own process, if this has happened to you, to see where was the ball dropped? What could we have done better? And obviously, at a minimum, asking them, well, why didn't you go with us in the first place, so you can start working on that? You hear it a lot, and it's always surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. Well, Ricky, thanks for joining. We're going to wrap with our fast five. So favorite business book and why?
Okay. Favorite business book. I'm going to give you. So the first one is just going to be sales related. And it's To Sell as Human by Daniel Pink. It's all just about, no matter what you do, most people don't like to think about it, but even a physician, right? Like, you're trying to tell someone why they need to do X, Y, or Z, take this medicine or do this. And if you're directly trying to get people to part with their money to remodel a home, you're definitely in sales. And so I think it has a good message, and anyone could take a lot from it. And then the second book that is all business related would be The Ultimate Sales Machine. Is just good on all aspects of business.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. All right. Who is the most inspirational person in your life?
I would say my wife, Bethany, my son, Teddy. You know, I have a really solid rock in terms of, knowing, why you do a number of different things. Again, just the motivation to get through those hard points. I've definitely been really lucky to have that solid foundation and a great rock.
Amazing. All right. If you could have one superpower, what would that be?
So if it was flying, it would be at like supersonic speeds. But I think the easiest way would be just teleporting. I am always, it's just a waste of time to be going back and forth. And I wish I could just do it immediately.
That's always my pick too. All right. Describe yourself in three words.
Okay. three words. I'm going to say problem identifier. I'm able to identify a problem. And I would say optimistic.
Sweet. All right.
We'll change it to competitive. A little bit more certain.
Okay. Yeah. That it was a little wishy-washy there. So. Competitive, maybe. Yeah. There we go. All right. Competitive, optimistic, problem identifier. All right. If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would that be?
Have all your metrics on actual data. It's easy to project what that looks like from a revenue and growth standpoint. If you know, I get 10 calls and I close 1%, or let's say 10%, not 25%. That means out of those 10 calls, you have one project in there. And it's a lot easier to project what that looks like over 12 months by going off those numbers rather than what you would wish those numbers are.
Very good. Very good. Well, Ricky, thanks for the time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Ricky. A lot of good information in there talking about sales and strategy, and hopefully you walked away with a few things that you can do to improve your sales process. As always, we'd love to hear from you. Let me know your biggest takeaway from today's episode. Just send me a note at radio@builderfunnel.com. Just leave me a comment or a reply. And if you want a free copy of my book, The Remodeler Marketing Blueprint, just put radio in the subject line. And again, the email address is radio@builderfunnel.com. Go ahead and include your mailing address in the body of the email, and my team will flag that down and ship you a copy at no charge. And again, would love to hear your feedback on today's episode. And with that, we'll see you next time here on Builder Funnel Radio.